Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
Welcome in to the Husker 24/7 Hoopscast. I'm Mike Schaefer, joined by Brian Christofferson here on a Tuesday morning. Nebraska coming off of a I don't want to say disappointing, because I don't even feel like it was all that unexpected, but sort of the way they got hammered at Iowa, coming off of a win against the number one team in the country at home against Purdue, certainly felt disappointing. Brian, let's just dive right into the Iowa game that was. You watched it. I watched the second half of it. What do you feel like went wrong for Nebraska throughout that contest over in Iowa City?
Well, you could start obviously with giving up 15 to 35 from three and, you know, give Iowa some credit. They had two guys who hadn't hit a lot from the outside that suddenly were making all their shots. They're also wide open. And I realize Nebraska, you got to give to get a little bit in this game on the defensive end. Sometimes you want to do this and you're going to give up that over there, but it was entirely too easy. Whereas like a few days earlier against Purdue, the defensive effort was, I felt so relentless that even though Purdue was hitting three pointers in that game, I thought it was happening after Nebraska like made them strain for it, you know, Diaco strain, get those type of shots, or they're going to have a nice pass or something to set it up. This was just simplistic Iowa moving it around. Well, like, okay, here, boom, shot. And it felt entirely too easy. And then the other part, of course, is it was 17-2, like 5 or 6 minutes into the game. And you see this all the time in college basketball, where if you spot a team like that sort of lead, even if you climb that hill, which Nebraska did, and they briefly got the lead, and it was 50-50.
Yeah, 50-49, something like that.
Yeah, at the 16-minute timeout, exactly. They went to the benches, and the score at that moment was 50-50. And anybody's game. But, of course, what happens in these scenarios a lot is you expend a lot of energy coming back, the mental part of it and all this. I think, you know, maybe it's not easy to grasp exactly how it happens, but you've worked hard to get to that point, and then it's hard to just keep it coming. And Iowa punched back, and then that was that. And Nebraska really didn't have an answer the rest of the game. You know, the last 12 to 14 minutes, it was just Iowa doing what Iowa wanted.
Yeah, it just felt like it was a night where Bryce Williams was off. Nebraska didn't shoot the ball well. It increasingly feels like they're not going to be a good enough team from three-point defense, so they have to counteract that by shooting well. And if they don't shoot well on the road, which so far that seems to be a bit of an issue, all four road games they played this year, I think they haven't shot particularly well from three. I think their field goal percentage was fine on Friday, but they have to be able to make shots from the outside. Like they're built that way, and you have to make teams respect it. And it just felt like it snowballed, and as you said, they spent a lot of energy to get back to 50-50, and it just did not feel like they were going to be able to bring that thing home once Iowa took another swing and kind of put them on the mat. Like they didn't really pick themselves up after that. But they have an opportunity with Rutgers, another road game, another Big Ten team that's capable, I think, of playing with anybody but losing to anybody. Yeah. And that's really, Brian, I think the story of this conference. I mean, I think there are no – even at home, Nebraska can have to come out and earn all of their wins. Like, I just don't feel like there's any real gimmies in this conference. And they blew a 17-point lead in Minnesota, and it felt like they gave away an opportunity in Iowa. Feels really important to me that they go into Piscataway and play well. And this is a place where they have played well in the past. They have won on the road there. K-State Tominaga absolutely lit up the Scarlet Knights last year. I think C.J. Wiltshire had a good game as well. He's a New Jersey guy. Feels like this is a big, big opportunity in front of them on Wednesday. And a game where, I'm going to be honest, if they can get that, and then you have these two home games against Northwestern and Ohio State, and you're able to hold serve at home, that Iowa game's just going to be in the rear view for us. And so it always kind of felt like coming out of the Purdue thing, if they could go 1-1 on these road games, they were going to be in a really good spot. Here you're on the back end of starting 0-1, and they're going to need to go get a win in Piscataway.
Well, you know that I like to section things off, and there was that part in December where it's like go 2-2. Then there was the part between the early part of January where it's like to the Iowa game, go 2-2. Nebraska did go 2-2. And then on Friday morning, someone asked about, oh, they got to win at Iowa, right? Or else people are going to. And I thought, go 1-1 on this road trip. And so you let one slip. Didn't even slip it. They just took it from you. You know, get over it.
That's a team that averages 90-some points at home, by the way. Like, it's easy to write Iowa off, but they're really no different than all of their teams that Nebraska has beat in Lincoln as well. Like, they're just. When they snowball you, they snowball you.
I think the thing that happened in some people's minds with Iowa is their record doesn't look as good at first glance. And people remember the score they had against Iowa State that popped up like in December, and Iowa State just took them to the woodshed. And so I think there was sort of this thought like, oh, well, they're down. They look pretty good to me, actually. They're going to be a tough team, I think, the rest of the way. And at home, they just play really well. So, there's no shame in that loss. It's not like it's a bad loss on paper. So you move on from it. But eventually you're going to have to get two or three of these games on the road. And this one Wednesday night in Piscataway is definitely one where you could grab it. But I think you're right, Schaefer. Like, this is a league where every night you're going to have to bring it with some edge to pull ahead. Nebraska doesn't have enough. They're a good team, but they're not so loaded you can just step on the floor and not have that edge and expect to win. And I think that goes for almost everybody in this league, except save 100%. Maybe Purdue on some nights and Wisconsin. But even those guys have found that if they don't have it, you know, you can have a tough night.
Yeah, I mean, we just saw a Maryland team that I watched lose to Belmont earlier this year take it to Illinois. And Brad Underwood talked about his team didn't show up with the right attitude to play in that game. They didn't have it. And I just think this is I don't think it's a top heavy conference. Like, if that makes sense, I think there's a lot of teams that are around the same level of quality. And that's why you just can't show up and assume that you're going to win anywhere. And whether it's teams coming to Lincoln or whether it's Nebraska going somewhere else, it is hard to play on the road in this conference. The environments are difficult. The game flow is difficult. There's good players, there's veteran coaches. And I just feel like we see it night in and night out with these results. There's going to be a car crash of teams right around 9-9. I mean, it would be, or excuse me, 10-10, right? They play 20 conference games now. If Nebraska could get on the front side of that at 11-9, it's going to be huge for conference tournament seeding. It's going to be huge for where they want to be in terms of overall wins and making the NCAA tournament. And if they're on the other side of it at 9-11, it's going to feel like they have work to do in that Big Ten, you know, in that Big Ten conference tournament, and their work to do potentially elsewhere. So it is there's not a lot of give. You know, they're going to have to go out and earn these games. And that's why, I mean, when we section off the thing, it's not just because oh, it looks really tough for these next four games. It's kind of like that has to be the mindset. Yeah. If they can hover around 500 and then steal a few wins in a row or string a few wins in a row, they don't have to necessarily steal them. They can go out and win those games. That sets them up for the ultimate conversation that you and I would love to have in February, where it's not, is Nebraska on the bubble? It's no, Nebraska seems firmly in this tournament right now.
Yeah. And you're going, and they're going to have to deal. There's going to be noise like before games like this around the state where it's like, oh, they got to have this game. And it, yes, it is an important game. I think we're going to run into that conversation though, like five times till we get to the end, where there's going to be a game where people are like, if they don't win this one, it's over. They're probably going to lose one of those like five games when we have that when we have that conversation, but you got to win the majority of them. And so here's a chance to start off on a good path with that sort of deal against a Rutgers team that you can't overlook them, but they aren't quite built like they were the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Like
it's not a slam dunk tournament team. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they're going to be tough though in that gym, and they kind of have a blue collar way about them. So you've got to match that.
Have you had a chance to talk with players, coaches since the Iowa game? Have they had a media availability in there?
No, and there won't be. As you know, I wanted to go to Iowa, but the snowstorm had other plans for me, so I didn't make it. But Fred did his radio show last night, and that's going to be it till Wednesday. So, you know, what he said and stressed, and I think they're really trying to bang home with this team, is it's the old don't get too high, don't get too low deal. And as he said, there's going to be games like after Purdue where people act like you're amazing and all this stuff. And then there's going to be the days after Iowa where people are like, they'll never win another game, you know, sort of the talk around the state. So you got to really block all that out, not worry about it. But the biggest thing I thought that came out of that was he said in those big wins they had, guys were talking it out on the court and figuring it out together. And even when they got to the huddles, there was like, they were on top of it. And against Iowa, I don't think they had that. Like they just never were on top of that game or together, like in that same way they were in the other ones. And so you got to get back to that immediately. And that's going to be huge. And obviously you're going to need specific guys to step up their game. And then you just got to hit shots. As you mentioned, you only hit 4 3-pointers against Iowa. Yeah. You get outscored by 33 from behind the arc. Good luck. At least Rutgers isn't known for being that type of team from the outside, but that's like, I should knock on this table probably just in case.
Yeah. I mean, we saw Nebraska give Indiana, I believe, their best 3-point shooting night of the year. So, and then that was a game where Nebraska won by double digits. So it's a, again, it's a tough conference. It's going to have to, you know, Nebraska's going to have to grind things out. It's worth pointing out to people that even the last team that made the tournament wasn't firing on all cylinders in January. Like, it is a long conference season. Like, there is a lot of games left. A loss in January is not going to upset the apple cart. It's not going to prevent Nebraska from where it wants to go. But they do have to start stringing some wins together, and they're going to have to Brian, I think they're going to have to find a way where they can consistently transfer their style of play from home and away a little bit more than they have so far. I mean, I just don't, I don't know. You know, I made this joke on a radio show, but it reminds me of the Hoosiers scene where Gene Hackman he goes into what is Hinkle Fieldhouse. And they put Ollie on I think Butch's shoulders, and he has him measure it. And he's like, "You'll see, gentlemen, the measurement here is the same at our gym at home. You know, it's still the same equipment. It's still the same distance. For some reason, Nebraska just hasn't been able to hit those shots in the same way." And so I think if they can figure out a way to play just marginally better on the road, or unlock some of their shooting ails when they are on the road. And some of it is obviously you got to give credit to other teams' defense, but there was open shots against Iowa. Mm-hmm. Like I don't want to make it seem like Iowa came out and played good defense against Nebraska. Nebraska just didn't hit shots. They had guys that were available. And the other thing, Brian, that I think is going to be interesting, teams are going to continue to try to take away Tominaga. How can Nebraska build an offense where maybe he isn't going to get a ton of shots every night, but you can utilize him in a way to stretch teams, you know, we saw it early in the year. He would go up for some of these shots, but they would end up just being dump in passes to Rink Mast. I would love to see what Fred Hoiberg can build off of Tominaga a little bit as a decoy as he continues to get more and more attention from teams that just, you know, all right, we want to see if everyone else at Nebraska can beat us, but we're not going to let this guy go for 25 points tonight.
Yeah, and you're going to see a little zone thrown at you too, I think, because Iowa did that the last 15 minutes or so, and Nebraska got stagnant. And so Nebraska went back, as Hoiberg said on his show, and really studied that. And as Hoiberg said, the middle was open, and they just weren't taking it against that zone. So there's some things there's lessons you have to take from a game like that, because you know that what you didn't do well is going to be really emphasized and is being emphasized up at Rutgers right now. Is like, this is how we're going to take advantage of these guys. So you got to cover up those leaks. So we'll see if that can happen. And then, you know, Bryce Williams is just going to be so huge to this team too. Like, he's just got to have to be a special dude down the stretch. I thought his performance against Purdue was masterful, considering the situation of not practicing and the block shots and the boards and all that. He didn't have his best game on Friday, and a lot of guys didn't. Sam Hoiberg was under the weather for that game and wasn't the usual pest that he is, you know, on defense. So just got to get back to who you have been in those wins, because they've shown when they play a certain style and with a certain relentlessness, that they're a tricky bunch. So that it's within them, but now you got to bring it out more consistently.
All right. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about Danny Nee. We're going to talk about dunk contests. We're going to talk about a little Nebraska Northwestern coming up this weekend. And of course, I have a random Husker Hooper, and we will see how many clues BC needs to nail this.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
From producers Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, explore how art and music sustained hope during the siege of Sarajevo, thanks in part to humanitarians and the band U2. Kiss the Future, new documentary now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Go to Paramount Plus to try it free. Terms apply.
So, I mentioned Danny Nee is going to be back in town. Nebraska has. They do this every year, Brian, I think, on a Saturday. This alumni weekend? Is that what we're calling it?
I believe that's the name for it. Yeah.
Yeah. So they welcome in all the former players and they bring them out onto the court. And it's always really cool to see how far back it can go. You know, sometimes in recent years, there's been guys that played in the 50s and played against Wilt Chamberlain and on those teams. One of the things that was remarkable, Brian, when they were discussing, I don't remember what show it was or where I saw this. They were discussing Nebraska's number one wins in school history. And they had a win, I believe, in 58 against Kansas State. And Kansas State was number one in the country, and Nebraska won that game. In the same week, they also went and knocked off Wilt Chamberlain and Kansas. Like, that is so remarkable when you say that out loud. And obviously, I'm not old enough to have watched Wilt Chamberlain, but he's one of those names that, like Babe Ruth for baseball, like, you know, the presence, you know, it means a lot just when someone says Wilt Chamberlain. And so for Nebraska to get two of those wins in 58, what a team. Hopefully one of those guys is available to be there this weekend.
Little known fact is Wilt had a late growth spurt. He was only actually 5'8 while playing at Kansas. No, that's not true.
You're not gonna convince me that he's Dennis Rodman over here.
No,
who
no,
was that's like not what 6 happened. Foot when he went to junior college and 6'8" when he left. So
yeah. That was a pretty magical week, old 58. I believe it or not, I wasn't alive then.
Yeah, so I wasn't going to ask you because I felt like the earliest memories you have of Nebraska basketball stems from the late 60s. So I don't want to age you too much here.
Danny Knee, really. You got to start at the knee. We can work right seamlessly here because that's when it started for me as a knee era.
I want to set you up with this because I don't have like my memories of it are Vincent Hamilton and Tyronn Lue and sort of the late stages of it. I knew even as a kid, the way that my dad would talk about him, I didn't know the word bombastic, but once I learned it, it's how I would probably assume Danny Knee to have been as a coach, as a figure at Nebraska. And those teams, I mean, there's a lot of talent that came out of those. And as we do the random Husker Hooper thing, you could stick in the 90s, and there's some really memorable players that I don't quite have the memories of or the wherewithal of, because it just occurred right before I would have gotten into Nebraska basketball. So I'm gonna just let you wax poetically about what Nebraska basketball was under Danny Knee in the 90s.
I remember I started following him like late 80s a little bit on they games would pop up on Raycom back then. That was where games would be aired.
I don't know what Raycom is.
Yeah, it was like a syndicated broadcast of games. Okay. And the Nebraska, like when Danny took over, especially late 80s when I started following them, they were kind of an afterthought in hoops and lower part of the Big Eight. It was an exciting league because it had coaches with personalities similar to Danny in their own way, like, you know, Norm Stewart and Billy Tubbs and all the Eddie Sutts, and these guys just like seemed larger than life. And would get on the court and there'd be like, sit down, Norm, you know, chants for Norm Stewart. And it was just a magical time of basketball, I think, in the league. And Danny, to his credit, quickly made Nebraska one of those teams where people knew they were going to have to play pretty friggin' well to beat. And he redshirted a lot of guys, as I recall, the year before it took off. And so they won like 10 games.
Was Bo Reed one of those guys? I feel like he was one of them.
So yeah. I believe so. I'm speaking off the cuff a little bit, but I know there were a lot of red shirts. And so they thought they might have something behind the scenes, but nobody else really knew that. And they're kind of just like, whatever. And then that 91 team came up and they just started winning early. And then they were, they were knocking off like Kansas and some of these teams, and you're like, man, they this is different. And I remember there was a point where you're like, I kind of expect them to win, you know, when they're playing like Oklahoma State and those sort of games. They won 26 games that first NCAA tournament team he had, were a 3 seed. They lost to Xavier, kind of heartbreaking. But yeah, he made it really exciting, and they just played a fun style of basketball. And the Devaney Center at that time was a really exciting venue to go to, I think, too. It got loud. It was intense. It was a tough place to play at if you're on the road. And you sort of expect in Nebraska during a certain era under Knee was going to find a way at home.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things that, like, I wish I could just, you know, this is not the best use of anyone's time machine, but I wish I could just go back there and be around for it, because the era of basketball that I inherited that came basically at the end of Danny Knee and then sort of the Barry Collier, Doc Sadler run, while there was individual moments of enthusiasm and excitement, you didn't have these teams and really almost a cast of characters. Like, you had some really interesting players that were playing for Nebraska at that time, and guys that went on to have, you know, NBA careers and play for multiple teams. And, you know, Tyronn Lue is now an NBA coach. And so it's just one of those things where it feels like the last truly great run of Nebraska basketball was now, what, 30 years ago, almost thereabout. So it's nice to have Danny Knee come back in. You know, I don't think that Nebraska's on the precipice of anything like that right now. But it reminds you that it can be done. and it has been done, and that you can win and have winning basketball at a high level at Nebraska. And I hope to see that again. I really do. I mean, it's one of those things I wish that I could have experienced more of, but just, was not quite with it with basketball.
I was picturing you going up to some guy who's like, he's told you, I've figured out time travel. And he's like, I can take you anywhere. And you tell him, I'd like to go back to December of 1990 to sort of like get in right when that run's starting to happen for Nebraska basketball for the first time. And I'd like to see that guy's reaction.
I would imagine he's like, well, you're the third guy who said it this week. So I assume it's a pretty common choice, but I don't know. I don't know for sure. All right. So that's that weekend is the Danny Knee thing is happening here for Alumni Weekend. There's also going to be a dunk contest involving football players. Is this what I understand, BC?
That's what they were touting yesterday. Yes.
This has nothing to do with that, but for some reason, the thing in my brain that I remember is being younger and going to the Columbus High gym and watching like football players come in that had just graduated, and they would do this exhibition against some other team. And there would be a point or a spot in there where it would just, you'd have guys like trying to show off what they could do in terms of dunks. And it kind of gave me a little nostalgic when I saw that graphic come across Twitter the other day.
Yeah, that's a little blast from the past. Do you remember there used to be a TV show where they would have like guys from different sports participate in a dunk contest over the weekend? You'd just see, feels like Deion Sanders was in it, and stuff like that. They'd get pretty good names and they would show their best dunks. And that was great television as a
kid. Yeah, well, and now because of contracts and injuries and everything else, we'll never see anything like that again.
Yeah, it's kind of disappointing. But yeah, that's going on. It'll be interesting to see which football guys participate. Sort of back to this current team, this Husker Hoops team, beat Rutgers. And obviously those are going to be energy in the gym no matter what. But you win the game Wednesday, it just amps it up a couple of notches. Yep. And then you're having a real fun time Saturday against a pretty good Northwestern team.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the other thing I was going to toss in there. And they're a team that has given Nebraska problems under Chris Collins, given Nebraska problems anytime. But since Chris Collins has been there, they've been pretty good. And Nebraska hasn't quite figured out that team in the way that maybe they have. They had, I think, more wins in recent years against Purdue than they do Northwestern. So they've been a problem for Nebraska. And so it'd be a good win for them to get for a variety of reasons this upcoming Saturday. All right, Brian, are you ready for guess a random Husker?
Probably not. It's usually an embarrassing segment. I've realized that I'm really bad at name placement. Like I'm good at like certain moments and like, I can picture like, oh yeah, I remember this game, but with the guys I struggle. So I'll try my best, but man, I'm batting a bad average.
Yeah. All right. Well, here we go. I will give you the clues and we will see how you do. This Nebraska player came from a junior college and spent 2 years with the program. His final 2 years of eligibility spent at Nebraska. So I've given you that. Would you like to know which junior college or which years he played?
Which years?
All right. So he was on the 2016-17 and 2017-18 Nebraska basketball team.
I should know it then.
He was a captain on the 2017-18 team, started early in the year, but became far more effective when he became nominally the team's sort of sixth man that year. That was the Nebraska team that finished fourth in the conference and were rewarded with the NIT game on the road.
Who was their sixth man? Just what was his best moment? Do you have a moment that you think of?
Well, I have his bio pulled up here, so give me a second, and I will see what they consider to be the best moments. I have a clue that will 100% give this away, but I'm gonna
I don't think so, because I don't think so, but
I mean, his best game that year when he got moved to the bench is the first game he came off the bench. He had a 13.5 rebound performance and a one point win over Illinois on January 15th that I believe Nebraska won that game on free throws from James Palmer, who was fouled with like 0.3 seconds left. And Illinois was very unhappy about it. John Gross, I believe, would have been a coach at that time. Okay. Let's see, what else do we have here? He, as I said, was a team captain, started 19 games. His season high that year was a 16.7 of 8 from the foul line performance against UTSA. He, I believe, shot 44% from three in his final year. There's not like a specific moment that I think you're going to be able to drill in on, but. Okay. Do you have any names you want to throw out there from the 16-17, 17-18 era?
I mean, Glenn Watson was on that team, but yep. He wasn't
junior college.
No, he wasn't. He played a while.
This guy went to junior college as a bounce back. I believe he played his he started at Samford University, played in 31 contests, was selected to the 2015 SoCon All-Freshman team. Averaged 6.4 points, 3.3 rebounds a game. He is a guard, 6 foot, listed at 6 foot five from Cincinnati, Ohio. Do you want the clue that's just going to make it all appear for you?
Just tell me who it is.
He is the first of his name to be a Nebraska athlete. Someone that shares the same.
Evan Taylor.
Yes, it is Evan Taylor.
There you go.
Was it, did you have it before that, or was that the
No, I didn't have it. Then when you said that, I knew. I didn't know Evan Taylor's background at all. I you know what? I honestly forgot Evan Taylor was that like instrumental to that.
Yeah, team. He was a big part of there was a quote I think Tim Miles had in the 2018-2019 season where he sort of mm-hmm. mentioned like lamenting they didn't have his kind of toughness coming off of the bench. Like he was
right.
He wasn't going to be a big scorer, kind of similar to Corey Sims, was a good defender. He
yep.
was a ball handler, just kind of provided some toughness for a team that needed it in certainly in 16-17, but again in 17-18.
I didn't know he was 6'5", actually. Man.
Yeah. Just slightly taller than the other Evan Taylor that will be here that you've spoke to. For a great story that we had here.
Yeah, he's right. That Evan Taylor is an early enrollee on the football team who is working through a rehab after an injury. So hopefully he's back healthy soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the giveaway to me. It was like, oh, yeah, there's another guy with the same name. It's like, oh, it's Evan Taylor.
Yeah, I guess I could have told you the junior college, but I don't feel like that would have mattered. There's not like a singular Evan Taylor moment in a good way. I think it was a Cincinnati game. He had a chance to ice it, and he missed some free throws that would have finished the game in 2016-17, and they ended up having to go to overtime or something like that. I remember he did not – he had a couple of free throws that were critical for Nebraska to win a game in regulation, and he did not make them. But I was trying to think of more positive memories, and I just don't have them associated with something particularly strong. I was hoping the six-man thing – and the 2 year junior college and then Samford, I thought it might click at that point.
I don't know the guy's bios very well from back in the day before I was back covering in the day, it.
That might be one of our more recent players.
No, back in the day to me is like before I was like covering it more daily. Oh. Like I didn't worry too much about where they were from or whatever. I knew the roster in that given year. And then you kind of like, okay, you move on to the next roster and you forget about guys and all this stuff, or not forget about, but they all blur together at a certain point. You know what I mean? Like it's hard. There's like five guys. Like as you're giving that, those clues, there's like five guys who are like, yeah, no, it's not him. And you don't want to say that out loud, 'cause you're like, that's a stupid answer, you know? And then sometimes it is that guy. Yeah. I had a feeling it was Mikey Moore pretty early in your clues the one time. I was like, no, I don't want to guess that because I don't think he was on that NIT team. And then it turns out he was.
Yeah, he was. He was. All right. Well, we will be back next week with another Husker 24/7 Hoops cast. We'll be breaking down the week that was with Rutgers. They play on Wednesday, 6 o'clock. I believe that'll be a BTN game. And then I think a midday one, like a 1:15, 1 p.m. start against Northwestern. So a little bit earlier, it will be, I imagine, a pretty good environment in Pinnacle Bank Arena. So if you have the opportunity to get out, I'm sure they will be pumping the heat in that building. So even if it's cold outside, they'll have you nice and toasty in Pinnacle Bank Arena. So everyone enjoy the wonderful weather we have going on right now in Lincoln and throughout the state. Brian and I will be back next week with another podcast. Be sure to check out all of Brian's coverage from Husker 20 or on Husker 24/7 for this basketball team. Check out all of our coverage in general. We obviously cover a lot of football as well, and there's plenty going on right now. So check out Husker 24/7. So for Brian Christopherson, I'm Mike Schaefer. We'll catch you next time.